Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome in. It's the Lions 24/7 podcast coming from downtown Dallas. Sean Fitz, Tyler Donahue here for the Cotton Bowl. We're recording on Friday early afternoon, less than 24 hours away from kickoff, 11 a.m. here Saturday, the 84th Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic. Penn State looking for win number 11 on the season. They're going up against the AAC champion Memphis Tigers, who for the first time in their program history have won 12 games on the year. And you'll hear more about Memphis and what they bring to the field a little bit later here on the show. We have Christian Fowler, who covers the Tigers for 24/7 Sports. But first, before we get to that bowl matchup, Sean, news coming on Thursday morning, right as everyone's getting ready to head over to Penn State's Media Day at AT&T Stadium. They find their man, and they find a familiar name for the offensive coordinator role, replacing Ricky Ronnie.
One of the first names brought up in the search, Kirk Ciarrocca, offensive coordinator for the Minnesota Golden Gophers. You know him as one of the two teams that beat Penn State this year. Impressive performance out in Minneapolis, no doubt about it. But yeah, you got this going. You added a little bit of experience to the mix. That's one thing that we always talked about. This was not really a job to learn on the fly, and that's something that Ricky Ronnie tried to do. And as I've mentioned before, Ricky Ronnie, not as bad as you're going to remember him. But still, this is one of those things where they can, you know, take the next step forward as James Franklin wants to put together a championship or playoff caliber offense. I mean, this is one step forward. We'll get into 2020 and all that kind of stuff. But for now, you're bringing a Pennsylvania guy home, 22nd ranked scoring offense in the country. And really, I mean, you got to put that in perspective, what they did at Minnesota, what PJ Fleck's been able to do at Minnesota with Kirk Ciarrocca. And at their previous stop at Western Michigan, has been some really, really productive offensive football.
Franklin referred to him as a proven playmaker and said that's really what they were prioritizing during the search for the right fit at offensive coordinator. You look at a guy who's proven himself, multiple programs. He's been Fleck's right-hand man. I know this has got to be pretty tough. I think Fleck referred to it on the practice field as Minnesota's getting ready for their Outback Bowl game against Auburn as kind of a small breakup, because 7 years with the same guy as the offensive coordinator, he really entrusted him with a lot at Western Michigan, a lot of success there. They were in the Cotton Bowl just, 3 years ago with Western Michigan. And so he goes to Minnesota. We had a firsthand account of what they were able to accomplish. And, you know, this is exciting, especially, I think, when you look at the quarterback position. Tanner Morgan blew up as a redshirt sophomore. Again, saw that firsthand from Nittany Lions' point of view. And I think, you know, you look across the board at the names that were on it. This is, you know, one that I think generates a considerable amount of excitement, and someone who certainly, as you said, there is not going to be any kind of learning curve. He's got a plan. He's going to try to, what Franklin referred to as, blend with what they think they want to continue concept-wise at Penn State, what they want to accomplish. But certainly there are aspects of what he has done in his career that are going to be new wrinkles and you know, new philosophies coming to Happy Valley.
And you take a look at the lists and things like that we had, and of course James Franklin kept a very tight hold on information during this search, but Ciarrocca was one of the first names that popped up. Logically, he's a Lewisbury, Pennsylvania native. Right down the road, he played at Juniata, graduated from Temple, he coached at a few stops, you know, in and around this region. So a lot of connections that will draw him back to Pennsylvania, and you know, it's going to be a fresh start recruiting for him, because obviously Minnesota recruits a different area. They try to do some different things. There's not a whole overlap in targets. I mean, guys, we reached out to Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams really didn't know who Kirk Ciarrocca was, other than, you know, Minnesota had a great year. He put together a great year. So, you know, so that'll be a work in progress. We'll see where he targets. Of course, Penn State's recruiting in the 2020, in 2020 is pretty much wrapped up, but 2021, wide open, a lot of talent out there in the region. So we'll see what kind of impact that has on it. But this is a guy that's well-regarded in the profession, gotten a lot of texts from coaches across the country. And let's be honest, coaches like coaches. I mean, that's just the way it goes. You know, in the profession, a lot of support, but this is a guy that's really well regarded in that industry. He's just been around for a long, long time. I think he's a tremendously nice guy from the people that we've talked to. So it's going to be there's going to be a transition, but at the same time, I don't think you're going to see that much different from what you saw from Penn State offensively this year. Minnesota, you know, they do some different things. They play to their strengths really well, and I think that's the biggest thing that I took away from watching Kirk Ciarrocca playing to those strengths. He had phenomenal wide receivers. He let them go up and make plays. The running game was very strong, and I think that you know, those guys at those two positions are going to be very happy, but I also think that quarterbacks is where it's going to make the biggest difference.
Yeah, Sean Clifford, Will Levis, got a chance to speak with both of those quarterbacks on Thursday afternoon, and each of them seemed to indicate they feel like it's going to be fairly seamless transition from what they have been studying, learning under Ricky Ronnie the last couple of years, and comparatively what is going to be incorporated with a new offensive coordinator. So you know, both those guys seem pleased. They were focused on the Cotton Bowl. They had a chance to kind of, you know, basically have an informal conversation with their new play caller in the team hotel yesterday. But Tyler Bowen is, you know, calling plays for the Cotton Bowl. They're focused on that. But once they got on that plane, get back to Happy Valley, there's going to be a lot of work to do. Franklin referred to it as a head start, the fact that he is here in Dallas. We'll talk about that more in a second. But, you know, one thing that stood out is the production at wide receiver. I mean, the very productive day against Penn State for Minnesota's wide receivers. But I think it's been an issue. We've talked about it a lot here on the podcast, the fact that beyond KJ Hamler, there's been a steep drop-off. Only one other wide receiver on this roster in 2019 actually caught a touchdown that wasn't named KJ Hamler. Jahan Dotson had four of them. You look at Minnesota, what they did under his direction this year, two wide receivers over 1,000 yards. Two wide receivers with 11 touchdowns apiece, and another wide receiver, a third receiver, who had five touchdown receptions. And I believe all three of those wide receivers scored against Penn State. So again, we have seen it here on the field in front of our eyes. And, you know, by the way, the ability to use various running backs. You know, they've had a lead running back here the last couple of years. But this year, three guys go over 400 yards. A couple years ago, they have two players go over 500 yards. A 1,000-yard rusher, both of cases with Rodney Smith. And I think that's another mystery that we want to see how it unravels for Penn State in 2020. They are going to have six scholarship running backs, it seems like, five of whom were blue-chip running back prospects, and the other is Journey Brown, who finished the strongest of the pack. So, you know, there's a lot of track record there that I think you can point to and say, how does this apply to Penn State's roster in terms of strengthening things? I think that's all important, and you know, it's hard to ignore the evidence that's right there in the stat sheet and that we've seen in person.
He'll be a great fit for the six-man running back rotation that we're going to be talking about next year, no doubt about it. Yeah, I just think it's really interesting the way that Tanner Morgan has progressed under him, completed 58% of his passes last year, up to 66%. Doesn't really seem like a lot, but you talk about some efficient games, 21 of 22 against Purdue. Really just watching that Minnesota versus Penn State game really put those receivers in the right spot to make the plays. Of course, Tanner Morgan was kind of surgical that day, and I wouldn't expect Sean Clifford to come out and be 21 or 22 anytime soon. But really, I mean, putting the guys in the right position to make the plays, and it's not about just sort of you know, improvising, say, you come off of this read and this guy should be open. I mean, it's about levels. It's about getting your receivers out in the appropriate amount of space. And really, they did that. I mean, just the way that they picked on Penn State's safeties, I mean, it's got to get you kind of excited to see what he can do in a situation like this. Now, the receiver room is being rebuilt, I guess we could say, as of now. So it's going to be a transition to see how he works with Jared Parker, see how he works with some of these other guys. I think the only thing that you would come away saying from this hire is what about the tight end? Minnesota really largely ignored the tight end. Of course, you've got Pat Freiermuth coming back. You've got a really good stable of players at that position. So we'll see how he adapts at his next stop, because it's not that he's been running back heavy. It's not that he's been receiver heavy or anything like that, but he's done a good job of playing to his strength. I think what Penn State's fans are going to be excited about, he's going to run the football.
Oh, he's going to run the football. And we just mentioned the nice stats for Tanner Morgan and the wide receiver group. But 64% of the time, they ran the ball. And you look at Penn State the last couple of years under Ronnie, right around 58% running the ball. It was even split back in 2017. And then in Moorhead's first year, you're looking at something similar with about a 58% rush. So,
and we'll see how he runs the quarterback. I think that's going to be something that we probably haven't talked about yet, where Sean Clifford was obviously beat up. Trace McSorley obviously beat up. If they can dial that back a little bit, and I'm not saying completely take it out of the game, but if they can dial that back a little bit, put a little bit more on their running backs, put a little bit less on their quarterback running the ball, I think, you know, you're not going to see the fall off that we saw this year.
Sean Clifford, I believe, finished as the team's third leading rusher this year. He had five touchdowns on the ground. Tanner Morgan this year, negative 59 combined rushing yards. So it's certainly a different scenario.
There's probably a middle point, a middle ground in that area.
Yeah, I'd say so. But I think, you know, when you look at Chiraga, one thing that stands out is he has worked for now two other opposing Big Ten coaches as an offensive coordinator. He worked for P.J. Fleck in Minnesota, as we all know. And then earlier in his career, he worked as an offensive coordinator for Greg Schiano the first go-round at Rutgers. So this is a guy who, you know, he has the sense of what it takes to kind of control your offense, and with a coach who's going to be a high-energy guy. You know, younger Greg Schiano, P.J. Fleck, those are coaches who demand a lot out of their staff. I think everyone who's familiar with James Franklin knows that there is a very high standard for what he expects from his coaches on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis, whether it's the middle of the season or the middle of the offseason. So it seems like a great fit, and quite frankly, I know Joe Brady was a name that was thrown around. That would have been at the very opposite end of the spectrum, probably a sexy pick, one that would have, you know, brought about a lot of headlines because of what he accomplished at an early age at LSU. But, you know, again, you're getting a situation where you're handing over the keys to someone who has just not been in that spot ever.
Brady would have been a real splash hire, no doubt about it. And I think, you know, I think Joe's going to be a phenomenal coach. You know, he's going to be a head coach sooner rather than later. But it's one of those situations where, you know, you're not sure with the body of work that he's put together that he's going to be the guy that can run his own offense. And I think he'll get there, but that's a lot of risk because you're talking about taking a guy that LSU is willing to pony up its money for, that knows how much, you know, you saw how much he changed that offense. Of course, Joe Burrow certainly helped, and a lot of the tools that he has at his disposal helped. But really, there was some unknown with Joe Brady. So, Kirk Sriracha, I don't really want to say that it's a safer hire, but I think the floor is a little bit higher than you would have gotten with a guy like Joe Brady. So, every hire at this point is a home run hire. I mean, you know, it's that time of year where every head coach that's been hired is a great hire, every coordinator that's been hired is a great hire. This guy's well respected in the profession, and really has put together an impressive string. And you know, people are going to probably single out Rutgers or some of his other stops along the way. And it's, you know, I apologize here. It's hard to be successful at Rutgers, but Western Michigan's offense was really good. Minnesota, the strides that they made was really good. And I think the biggest upgrade for Penn State is his experience. He's going to come in with his system. It's not going to be that much different than what you've seen with the Joe Moorhead, Ricky Ronnie system, but it's going to have a guy that put together that system calling it. And I think based on what we've seen the last couple of years, that can make all the difference in the world.
And, you know, even beyond that Rutgers, his time at Rutgers with Schiano, you know, he really built his case to make that jump to the FCS level at Delaware. And it was really a special time for the Blue Hens. They were competing for national championships at I think back then it was still the Division I AA. Now we know it as FCS. But, you know, produced a couple quarterbacks who got opportunities in the NFL. Andy Hall was a sixth-round pick for the Eagles back in 2004. And most notably, I don't care if you think he's elite or not, he's a Super Bowl MVP, Joe Flacco, first-round pick out of Delaware. Obviously, that was a second stop for him at the college level, but some nice resume builders. You throw in what we saw from Tanner Morgan this past autumn, and you know, there's a lot to like about what it could mean for Sean Clifford, for Will Levis's development, and those guys are, you know, it's very clear they're excited to get to work, and as much as they got to know Ricky Ronnie, and you know, they have pretty quickly turned the page talking with them. They're not lamenting about this transition. It seems like they are embracing it, as you'd expect. And Franklin, while he did not bring them in the room and say, give me your top five candidates, he was in collaboration, sounded like, with Clifford along the way, you know, wanting to use him as a soundboard for certain things. I'm sure he kept a lot of that internal, but Clifford was part of the discussion. He said he really appreciated that, and both quarterbacks say they have full trust that James Franklin was going to go out and do the best he could and try to tip this team to the national championship level.
It'd be really interesting to see how they play to the strengths. Of course, you know, Will Levis as a redshirt freshman, obviously he's a runner right now, and that's what they could use him as. Minnesota would go to that situation. You know, I don't want to call it a wildcat because it was a quarterback, but they would run their goal line package with a quarterback. So be really interesting to see how he adapts to the talent that's on this roster, because you look at what they've got coming back in 2020, and this is aside from KJ Hamler or if Justin Shorter were to come around, and that's another conversation. Hamler says he's already made his decision, so I don't think that's going to really impact it all that much. Shorter popped up at Florida this week, not really on a visit, but he was in Gainesville, and that's been a school that's been mentioned with him before, so I don't think it changes his setup. But if you're Justin Shorter, and we're playing hypotheticals here, look at what he did with those receivers at Minnesota this year. Look at where at how those receivers are built. And I know Justin Shorter probably wants to forget that game, Minneapolis, but he went up, he let those guys make plays. They did so. Really talented group of receivers. A couple of those guys are going to be drafted. So it's very intriguing. If you're a running back, if you're a receiver, very intriguing to see what they can do. James Franklin talked last week, I think, at Media Day about how many miles these running backs have, and now all of a sudden you're going to throw two more into the mix. He's going to have to manage that. It's going to be about balance in that situation. It's going to be about finding the top guys at that receiver situation, and it's going to be about integrating the tight end. The offensive line, you'll see where it goes from there. They've got a ton of experience coming back. I don't really expect anything to change at that point, but you'll see what happens at a spot like left guard where Caden Wallace can maybe make a run at what I believe to be Mike Miranda's job right now. So he's going to have a lot of tools to work with. It's about finding the strengths, what he believes the strengths are in that offense, and going from there.
He's got a nice little welcoming gift, though, waiting for him in Happy Valley, I think about a week or two after he sets up shop in his office. Keziah Holmes comes to town, big-time running back prospect. He's getting a couple wide receiver prospects on campus. And then Micah Bowens will be there eventually, and that's the other interesting thing. Beyond Levis and Clifford, who are very much going to be in the spotlight this offseason, and their development will be focused on, there are three scholarship quarterbacks on the projected 2020 Penn State roster who will carry four seasons of college eligibility: Micah Bowens, Taquan Roberson, and Michael Johnson Jr. None of them were personally recruited by their new offensive coordinator to Penn State, but he inherits a room that we've talked about it a lot in the podcast, is the future star there in that mix of these three young players who we don't know much about at the college level at this point. That's one of the first things that Kirk needs to come to town, and I'm sure he's going to evaluate as the quarterback's coach exactly what he has in that room, where things need to be upgraded, and additionally where he wants to focus his attention on the 2021 class, because we have said there's about four or five quarterbacks with Caleb Williams topping the wish list in that class. Maybe he sees one of those guys in a different light than perhaps Ricky Ronnie did.
And on top of that, he already had a quarterback committed to Minnesota in 2021. 2021 is going to be a pivotal year for Penn State in terms of recruiting a quarterback, but this is nothing new. Caleb Williams is out there, Christian Vayu, Jake Rubley. I'm not sure where things stand with him because he had that connection with Ricky Ronnie being from Colorado, and Doug Nussmeier's kid down in Garrett down in Texas. So be really interesting to see what direction that goes. Penn State, of course, is going to want to get these 2021 guys on campus in January. The entire month of February, I think, sans the first weekend right before signing day, is a dead period. So you're going to want to get these guys on campus as soon as you can, meet with them, see what happens with them, and go from there.
And you wondered, what's the story with Shiraka? Is he going to join this team in Dallas? Is he going to see it through with Minnesota, which would be a strange situation despite a very successful season there with the Golden Gophers? He is not in Tampa with Minnesota as they prepare for Auburn. He is here in Dallas, getting not really partaking in any kind of game plan development. That's Tyler Bowen's interim status for this game. He's going to take it through. The offensive staff is going to take it through the finish line here for 2019. But Franklin said the most important thing is basically just observing some of these practices, taking it all in from a culture standpoint, basically collectively getting to know some faces, matching names to those faces on this roster, on the staff. You see it. The Power 5 coaching staffs and support staffs are just massive. He can spend this entire trip in Dallas shaking hands and introducing himself to people if he tried. So I think, it's interesting. Franklin said it's a head start for this team going into their offseason and eventually spring practice. Just these few days that Shiraka will spend with the quarterbacks and with the offensive room and get to know some of the personalities. And also he'll be observing very closely through 60 minutes on Saturday when they face off against Memphis. And, it's an interesting thing. You and I spoke. This guy has been the play caller for PJ Fleck the last 7 years and with a lot of success. And he's done it here in the Cotton Bowl before. I got to imagine it's going to be a bit strange for him to sit back as a spectator while Tyler Bowen is dialing up the plays.
And that's something Joe Moorhead did in the Tax Slayer Bowl against Georgia a couple years ago. Of course, Christian Hackenberg started that game, but Trace McSorley finished it, got an idea of what to work with, and sort of went from there. So we'll see what happens. Of course, Tyler Bowen's going to call the plays on Saturday against Memphis. If you were wondering, Kirk Shiraka made about had in his contract to make about $1.1 million this year. To me, that says something about the level of candidate that James Franklin was pursuing. and the amount of, I guess, capital that he was allowed to go after these guys with. So from that standpoint, I think that's a very good sign from a program health standpoint. We got Sandy Barber after James Franklin's press conference a little bit earlier today. She mentioned that some of the details of the contract would be out in early 2021. That assistant
2020,
pool,
I don't think it'll make it that long.
Hey, it might be. Who knows? Yeah. That's it. That will be out, and that assistant pool is so important in that, and that's one thing that she admitted that James Franklin had to go with.
The way that she phrased that was they hit the number that Franklin wanted for that assistant pool. I'm sure that number is never actually totally met by any head coach when what they want to be able to afford to pay these assistants. But look across college football. There's a lot of seven-figure coordinators out there right now, and a lot of them are preparing for college football playoff games this week. That's the way of the world. That's how college football is trending. Anything else on this? I mean, we're going to talk about this all offseason and the development with Shiraka and this offense. Anything else to add before we flip the script and get going with our Memphis preview?
Not much. We had Ryan Burns from Gopher Illustrated on before the Minnesota game. He was
fan
phenomenal.
Favorite.
Yeah, he's going to come back next week and talk to us a little bit about that offense, what he saw from the development of that offense. So, I mean, honestly, you know, you kind of expected Ricky Ronnie to be back after the season. Mm-hmm. That's not the case. And all of a sudden, you've got a new offensive coordinator, which I think, you know, a lot of Penn State fans, that's what they were pining for. So you
never noticed it.
Got what you wanted. You know, you didn't have to fire anybody. You didn't have to do anything like that. So all of a sudden, you're hoping there's an upgrade at the position. And looking at his resume over the past 7 years, you got to like where they stand with this. I think it's a very good hire.
And considering the timeline here, it's pretty impressive stuff by Penn State to it's kind of neat and tidy before they even get to kickoff of the Cotton Bowl. And, you know, hats off to the administration and Franklin. Not only does he work a contract extension and deal with the departure of Ricky Ronnie after, you know, being almost a decade together on the same staff, very quickly finds his target in the Big Ten against a team that broke their hearts earlier this year and gets it done before either team enters a bowl. I think that's pretty big time.
Well, I think his hand was kind of forced. Of course, the Pioneer Press out in Minnesota was the first one to report this story. I'm not sure James was ready to jump on that one, but here we are in Dallas. Kirk Shirakis here as well. It's wrapped itself up very nicely. And score one for the flight trackers. They had that flight from State College to Minneapolis marked shortly before Christmas. So they certainly got that one done.
Well, we'll put that subject on the back burner for now. A lot to come on it throughout the winter and into spring. For now, though, we'll turn attention to the 12-win Memphis Tigers program with Christian Fowler, who covers them for 24/7 Sports.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Here's where we can see them!
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it all on fire!
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10/9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
We're here in Dallas with Christian Fowler, who covers Memphis football for 24/7 Sports. He's been covering the Tigers for a couple of seasons now, and he's going to give us a little more in-depth analysis on what Penn State will be facing when they hit the field on Saturday at 11 a.m. for that kickoff. And Christian, first off, thanks for taking some time. Join us in our lovely hotel room here in Dallas, Texas.
I appreciate you guys having me on.
Well, we spoke about this when you came up to the room, and you know, you did not see this Memphis team ending up in a New Year's Six Bowl playing in a game of this magnitude. What has been the most surprising aspect of this Tiger season from your standpoint?
Well, I think coming into the season, there was a couple websites that favored them to win every game, and I didn't expect that. Some of the fans jumped on that bandwagon, and then when they lost to Temple earlier in the season, everything kind of vanished. Like, no one was talking about it anymore. Everyone said the Cotton Bowl was out of reach. It wasn't going to happen. And then they obviously rip off 7 in a row, beat Cincinnati in the championship game, and win back-to-back weeks against a really good Cincinnati team. So really the resolve of this team after that loss to Temple, because I think they were clearly the better team in that game, but they turned the ball over 4 times. And then after that, it felt like you know, the wheels really could have fallen off after that. They could have went the opposite way, but they didn't. They showed their resolve, won 7 in a row, and here we are.
We saw a team in person this year where the wheels did fall off after a loss to Temple. The Maryland Terrapins happened to them. Memphis obviously surged the rest of the way. And interesting dynamic is the way they finished the regular season with Cincinnati and punched their ticket to a conference championship against Cincinnati to get to this point. What was that, kind of the way that shaped out? Very rare. The Memphis, when it earned its spot here, was there any doubt in your mind that they could handle Cincinnati back-to-back weeks?
Well, I felt like, you know, obviously, like you said, it's rare. This was, I believe, the fourth time teams have played in back-to-back weeks in college football history, which is obviously very unique. And they switched quarterbacks as well. So in the first matchup, Cincinnati's backup quarterback, redshirt freshman Ben Bryant, played very well, was a much better passer. In the championship game, their starting quarterback, Desmond Ridder, came back. Not as good of an arm, but he can run. So I thought Memphis would be able to handle that a little bit better, and they didn't. They weren't able to corral him in the pocket. So I honestly expected them to win by more than they did against Cincinnati, but they did. They took care of business down the stretch. Both of those games were tightly contested and really could have went either way. But once again, I think it speaks to the character of this team and the way that they're able to finish games. And Cincinnati is really a solid football team on both sides of the ball, especially up front in the front seven. So Memphis able to handle them twice in back-to-back weeks is pretty incredible.
Memphis ranked 17th in the college football playoff rankings. 12 wins for the first time in school history. Outright conference champion for the first time since 1969. It's an historic season for Memphis, but they're without their head coach who, you know, helped build them to get to this point over the course of four seasons. He moves on to Florida State. We just had a chance to see his replacement. Officially, the interim tag has been removed, and Coach Silverfield at the press conference. Why was he the right pick, and what do you think about him starting off his career against Penn State in the Cotton Bowl for game number one?
Well, first off, that's got to be incredible for him. You know, not only is he coaching his first collegiate football game, but it is in the biggest game as far as spectacle goes in school history. I mean, Memphis has never been to a New Year's Six Bowl. They're playing against one of the most storied teams in college football history. So it's got to be an incredible moment for him. But I really think he was the right guy because this is who everyone wanted. I haven't seen many coaching searches where a whole city just wrapped their arms around a coach. I mean, it seemed like every fan wanted Silverfield, every current player, every former player, every recruit. I think him only losing one commit in the early signing period said all we needed to know. Because it's pretty drastic for a coaching change to occur, and you only lose one out of 14 commits, and you sign everyone in that class. So I think that says that the players love him, recruits love him, and it was just the right choice. I mean, he stayed here. He's turned down some big Power 5 jobs and some NFL jobs to stay at Memphis because this is the job that he wanted.
Transfer market at quarterback has been crazy in college football recently, and maybe a name that's gone overlooked until this point, Brady White. He'll get a chance to showcase what he's all about. But for those who follow national recruiting closely, he was one of the bigger names in his class coming out of Southern California, with guys like Ricky Town and Blake Barnett and that collection. And here he is working his way, you know, from the Pac-12 now to Memphis. A couple really productive years. And he seems to be a guy that, if you're from a Penn State vantage point, he worries you a little bit because he seems like he maybe has that confidence and that ability to keep Memphis in this game and keep them in play if it turns into a bit of a high-scoring affair.
Yeah, the switch that he's really flipped down the stretch this year is pretty incredible because last year, a lot of people weren't happy with the way he played. He did have good numbers, but it really didn't tell the full story of how he played. They relied on screens and a lot of Daryl Henderson last year. Not many big passing plays, and it looked like it was going to be the same going into this season. It's how they started against Ole Miss. They only scored 15 points. Same thing. A lot of screens, a lot of short dump-offs, slants. And then, early in the season against, I believe it was against Tulane, they finally started letting him unleash it a little bit and throwing down the field. They actually put Kenny Gainwell out wide and let him work one-on-one with cornerbacks, and Brady was able to launch him down the field to him. And that was something that he had never shown at Memphis until earlier in the season, that he could push the ball down the field. So I think when he was finally able to do that, the confidence came. Then you saw Antonio Gibson develop into what he's become. DeMonte, obviously they knew what they had in him. And just receiving threats really popped up everywhere because of his confidence. Kadarian Jones came on because of him. Calvin Austin came on because of Brady White's confidence. So if he's able to get started early, which is something that this Memphis staff has tried to do with him since that Tulane game is let him throw the ball early and get comfortable. Because typically when he gets comfortable, he stays that way. He can hit the down-the-field shots, and he can get you into the right plays.
Nearly 7,000 passing yards, 59 touchdowns in his two seasons as Tigers starting quarterback. Sean, I've been hogging the questions here. You want to chime in?
That Memphis-SMU game was one of the best games I watched. Not maybe the best game I watched, but one of the most exciting games I watched this year. That Memphis offense obviously has got a lot to it. What kind of threat do you think they can impose to this Penn State defense, and how entertaining has it been to watch an offense that, you know, it's not just to spread them around like Texas Tech and throw it. There's a running game aspect to it. How fun has it been to watch this offense?
Last year the offense was explosive, but it was built really around the running game. Like you said, now there's so many different dynamics that they can really do anything on any given play, and I think it does make them dangerous. I mean, no one's really been able to stop them this year. The only quote-unquote bad game they had on offense was against Ole Miss when they scored 15 points, and they didn't know what they were doing at that point. They didn't know what they were going to do with Kenny Gainwell. That Patrick Taylor started the season at running back. That was the game that he got injured in. So there was a lot of stuff happening at the beginning of the season. But overall, it's been a ton of fun to watch because it has been one of the best and most productive offenses in the country. But with Penn State, I mean, the dynamic is what presents a problem because they're not one-dimensional. They can really do everything. They have weapons in the slot, on the outside, in the backfield. There's just so many ways they can attack. So if they're able to, you know, hold that front seven and hold those defensive ends, then they should be able to make some plays down the field.
A couple notable departures for Memphis after the season. Of course, a starting offensive tackle, starting tight end. How much is that going to impact their approach this week?
Well, I think with Joey Magnifico, I mean, he was a three-year starter and played as a freshman as well. Actually came in as a walk-on. Really one of the most beloved players that's worn a Memphis uniform. And he did so much more than stats show. I think he had 335 yards and three touchdowns this season. But his blocking skills are absolutely incredible. I mean, a lot of Memphis's run game is based on tight end blocking and the way that they can get to the second level. And Joey really developed into an incredible blocker, and it's a big reason why the running game has been so successful. And then with Scotty, he started every game at right tackle. And I believe what's been happening in practice is they've moved left tackle Obina Eze over to right, and Brian Thomas and Michael Denson have been working at left tackle. So that's a little different, to say the least, to have a new blindside tackle against one of the best defensive lines in the country. I mean, that's what they've been doing in practice. It could end up completely different. So it will be interesting to see what they do, because obviously containing this defensive line or trying to slow down this defensive line, to me, is one of the keys of the game.
We just talked to Ryan Silverfield. He was asked about the offense. It seemed there was a little ambiguity in his answer about how much he'll be involved. How much do you think that has changed their approach since the end of the season with the coaching change? How much do you think this offense will change going into tomorrow?
Well, I think going into the next season we could see some bigger changes, but you know, you've played 13 games up to this point. There's not much that you can change. The way that I've said it is, you know, Kevin Johns has taken over the play calling duties with Mike Norvell leaving. So you could see some different wrinkles and a different thing here and there, but I think, you know, schematically and for the most part, everything will be the same that we've seen all season. And I mean, obviously at this point, if you're Ryan Silverfield and the Memphis staff, you have nothing to lose. You've had the best season in school history. I think you go out there, you throw the kitchen sink at Penn State and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, with nothing to lose. I mean, are they a more dangerous team right now, do you think, than they were a month ago?
Absolutely. I think they're more dangerous now than they were against Cincinnati. And I think you see that in play calling. In those two Cincinnati games, they tried to run Patrick Taylor a lot just to wear down the front seven of Cincinnati. And they could do something similar because Penn State's solid up front too. But I think at this point, you're not playing for a conference championship. You know, you've already done that. You've done all these things. You're not expected to win this game. This is, you know, one of the best teams in the country that had a very difficult schedule, and that's why they're 10-2. So you go out there, you throw everything you can. Don't be conservative. And at the end of the day, hope you can make more plays than they make.
Defensively, it's not the same story. This is a team that's given up a lot of points. I mean, all the talk this week is going to be about Penn State's defense against Memphis's offense. Flip that around for us. What are you looking for when Memphis is on defense?
Well, Memphis has been very improved this season. Adam Fuller obviously left with Mike Norvell to go to Florida State. So former linebackers coach Kevin Klum will be taking over as interim defensive coordinator. But that's an interesting matchup as well, because Penn State hasn't had an explosive offense for the majority of the season. Memphis's defense will give up some points and yardage for sure. And to me, that could be the matchup that decides the game more than the one that everyone's talking about. Because if Penn State's able to score early in that game and get up on Memphis because the defense isn't playing well, then I think that could be the ball game. Or if Memphis's defense is able to force some turnovers and make some timely stops, then that could open it up for Memphis's offense. So that matchup's not being talked about, but I mean it should be very interesting. Memphis's front seven has been much better this year, but they've been weak in the secondary. So it's kind of the same thing. It's strength on strength against weakness on weakness. So it should be fun to watch.
If you're Penn State defensive coordinator Brent Pry and you got less than 24 hours now to finalize your plans for this matchup, which Memphis player would Penn State be better off being able to shut down in some way? Demonte Coetzee at wide receiver or Kenny Gainwell at running back? Gainwell, fourth in the nation in all-purpose yards. Coetzee, back-to-back 1,100-yard receiving campaigns. Who is more vital for Memphis?
I'm going to go off the grid a little bit. I think Antonio Gibson is what makes this offense roll. Antonio Gibson is what makes it, because he makes plays as a receiver out of the backfield on special teams. He can really do everything, and especially in those two Cincinnati games, he was used a ton in the backfield. So Memphis has put that on tape a lot this year, is him in the backfield. So whether he's in the slot, whether he's outside, whether he's returning kicks, whether he's running the football, he is just an explosive athlete. I mean, sometimes he looks like an NFL running back, sometimes he looks like an NFL receiver, and there's not many players in the country that can do that. So if they're able to neutralize a guy like that can do everything, that's one less weapon that you have to worry about in multiple aspects of the game.
Conversely, on the Penn State side, is there a guy that Memphis you think has to neutralize on this offense or defense, really?
Well, I think Gross Matos is the obvious answer. I mean, he's projected to be a first-round pick, and especially with what Memphis has going on the offensive line right now, if they're not able to neutralize him, if he's able to get penetration all game, if he's able to wreck the running game and get pressure on Brady White, then that really wrecks your game plan, because Brady White's confidence is centered on having time in the pocket. That's what he's had all year. The offensive line has played very well for the most part, despite being a fairly inexperienced group. So if they're not able to block him, if they're not able to stop him, then he could end up being a game wrecker.
Well, we know you have a lot of work to do, just as we do before this game, but let me leave you with this one. When you look at the matchup, if you're ready to give a prediction, we'd love to hear it. But additionally, what would Memphis be able to do to put themselves in a spot where you would be convinced they can win this game, and where, aside from maybe Brady White getting pressured, where could things spiral out of control for this Memphis squad if it goes in the opposite end?
Yeah, so if they're going to get it done, if they're going to take care of business, they've got to start fast. It's been the thing all year. They've been able to start quick and get on top. That's what they have to do, especially against an offense like Penn State that's not very explosive. If they can get up, allow their defense to kind of pin their ears back and rush the passer, I think that they have a much better shot. On the other side of that, if Penn State's defense comes out strong and they get pressure on Brady White, they force turnovers, that's the only time Memphis has lost this year, is when they've turned the ball over and lost in the turnover battle. So if Penn State's defense plays like they're capable of, and you know, Memphis's offensive line isn't playing up to their capabilities, and Brady White is rattled, then Memphis loses this game. If Brady White gets rattled, then it's more than likely over.
My final question, I need your barbecue hot takes. What do we got?
So this is weird. I'm not the biggest barbecue guy. I'm really not. I'm more more with the brisket. I like the pulled pork a little bit, so it's not my favorite. And yeah, I know it's kind of the thing in Memphis. It's not my favorite. Obviously, we get rendezvous for every home game, and it's, you know, their brisket is incredible. There's also a place called Memphis Barbecue. Those are my two favorite. Memphis Barbecue is not talked about enough. It's very good. It's actually in South Haven, so it's a little south of Memphis, but very, very good spot.
So if you're heading to this game as a Penn State fan and you want to offend somebody from Memphis, what do you tell them? In terms of barbecue.
Oh, you tell them Rendezvous sucks. I mean, that's the staple in Memphis. Rendezvous is a staple in Memphis. If you say Rendezvous sucks to a Memphis fan, you're probably starting a fight at that point.
Sean, these fans were getting along so swimmingly in Dallas, and you've just thrown around.
Yeah, he's trying to ruin it. He's trying to
say riots. That's why I came. Yeah.
Well, Christian, thank you for your time. You can give Christian a follow. Might be very timely for you Penn State fans this weekend, at C. Fowler 24/7. Enjoy the game, and then enjoy your basketball coverage into the winter.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me on.
Thank you. Thanks again to Christian for hopping on with us for a bit. We'll see him in the press box for the game. And Sean, one thing that stood out there, we have done a lot of focusing on Brady White, on the Memphis offense. They put up a ton of points, and he says, well, you know, this Memphis defense against Penn State's offense, and it struck me when he said, a Penn State offense that has not been very explosive. We just spent a lot of time talking about the offensive coordinator position. We'll see where it goes from here. But that's just strange to hear. And you know, you kind of assess the way they finished the year. No Noah Cain, no Sean Clifford. Beyond Hamler, we did not see much at all. Justin Shorter steps aside late in the season. And yeah, I think it's safe to say that regardless of who's calling the plays in this game on Saturday, and it is Tyler Bowen, the offense has a lot to do. And you know, hey, you're looking for a springboard towards next year as well, because there's a lot of returning components of this offense.
Yeah, and it's certainly one of those real unknowns right now, because I mean, you're not sure, is Bowen going to emphasize the chunk plays? And you know, James Franklin always comes out and talks about winning that battle. But, you know, what is he going to do for the continuity of the offense, you know, running these drives up? We saw at the end of the year, Penn State had a couple of really, really good drives, not always ending in 7 points. But we'll see what happens with that. I think, as I've said before, I think Tyler Bowen's a really sharp guy. I think he can figure out some sort of happy medium between there. To me, the chunk plays are one thing. The turnover battle's the other. Penn State's got to get on that. I think Brady White has had tendency to turn the ball over. They did so in their loss against Temple. If Penn State can force a fumble or two early, you know, they're going to be sitting in pretty good shape.
Spoke highly of Brady White, and as did Christian, and he's been very impressive. But the three games in which he's faced ranked opponents this year: Cincinnati twice, Southern Methodist earlier in the year. Less than 60% passing, and every other game he was above 60%. You're looking for little things, maybe chinks in the armor. Because look, I'm high on Brady White. I think he is. I think he's a more capable quarterback than what Penn State faced last year against Kentucky, a team that was built much differently. But quarterbacks have had success against Penn State down the stretch of this season. They've gone up against some good ones. Penn State has not been able to come up with some answers in that regard. So, you know, Tariq Castro Fields, whether or not this is his grand finale with Penn State, he has a lot to play for in this game at cornerback. And, you know, at the safety spot, Garrett Taylor's in his final game. And Lamont Wade, can he continue that momentum? We saw him put together a really strong second half of the season into November. You know, this is another game where you look for another step forward from Lamont Wade, because if he comes back, and I think we assume he will, you know, things are looking a lot rosier for that safety than it was coming into his junior season.
To me, this is a spot where Micah Parsons needs to be that guy. I mean, we say he's All-American, no doubt about it. We've seen how talented he can be. With the way that Memphis is going to go after it, Penn State can't take their skill position players lightly. They can play. I mean, those guys are really good. Like I mentioned, I watched that SMU game earlier this mm-hmm. year, and you know, they got a little bit of space and they got going. So can't take those skill position guys for granted. Where I'm looking at is those defensive ends, and we still don't know how much we're going to see of Yetur Gross-Matos, but you know, this is an opportunity for Shaka Toney. This is an opportunity for Jason Oway to sort of get going. One thing that caught my eye, or ear, I guess, this is a podcast, he mentioned the tight end not being in there, Joey Magnifico. Yeah. Phenomenal name.
A magnificent name.
Really just going to miss that name out there. But how important he was to that blocking scheme, and all of a sudden you take a tackle out of that as well. You know what? It's time for that defensive line to sort of live up to that hype and sort of step up to the plate and get to Brady White. If they can do that, they can force a fumble, they'll be okay. Getting into predictions, Penn State's a touchdown favorite. Seems about right. I mean, I don't know enough about Memphis. We think we know something about mm-hmm. Memphis, but without a coaching, you know, with the coaching change and switching over to Ryan Silverfield, you just don't know which way it's going to come out. Kevin Johns is going to call the plays for Memphis. I have Penn State winning 38-30. I know all the talk is about Penn State's defense, but, you know, we've seen them give up some points. We've seen them give up some yards. Now that they're healthier, that might change a little bit, but I think it's going to be an entertaining game.
It will be, and I think there'll be plenty of points. I'm going 34-24, so I think at the end of the day, it'll be a little bit more of a cushion for Penn State, but by no means do I see the Nittany Lions running away from this one. I do think, with Memphis, their defense across the board, I can't point to the playmakers that Penn State brings to the table. Now, will those playmakers for Penn State crank it up? And we've seen Micah Parsons down the stretch, double-digit tackles. Can he come up with one of those, fumble recoveries in a run back, or can Yetur Gross-Matos get it going? I think that's the key, and I do see this being their most productive pass rush game since way back, it feels like forever ago, homecoming against Purdue when they put up 10 sacks. I don't think they'll duplicate that performance, but I think it will be the best result from their pass rush since that game. And ultimately, I'm very, very curious to see what the running back rotation will look like. Why don't we finish the season how we started it? Journey Brown has deserved every carry that he gets in this game, but we had a chance to talk to all four of those running backs. And for those who don't understand, we don't get access to true freshmen over the course of the season. So this is the first time Noah Kane, Devin Ford were there with microphones in their face yesterday alongside Ricky Slade, Journey Brown. Unless they have great poker faces, it sure seems like everyone is on board with coming back in 2020. They're ready to finish this. And, you know, Noah Kane, I just have to imagine, so close to home, so close to where he's announced his commitment, and considering how they handled him and what James Franklin said about prioritizing his ability to play in a bowl game like this, and that's why they shut him down late in the year, I think we will see some spots for Noah, but it may be restricted to a series or two or three, like we did see earlier in the year. But I think that's a storyline that, granted, we've all been following it all year, but why not follow it again against Memphis?
Yeah, no reason to talk about running backs any more than we already have. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting with Sean Clifford and that Tyler Bowen dynamic. I think they're going to come out. I think they're going to be okay when you go on those scripted plays that you start the game with. And then what happens when they get off script? What happens when, you know, if they find themselves in unenviable field position or something like that? We're going to see a lot from Sean Clifford tomorrow. You know, hopefully he's healthy. Hopefully he can, you know, get back to the way that he was throwing around early in the season. If not, I mean, it might be a long day for Penn State.
One more note here. I know a lot of people don't love to hear about special teams, but Joe Lorig, special teams coordinator for Penn State, spent the last 3 years at Memphis, built up a very efficient special teams unit there. They're number two in the country this year. Number one is Penn State. So Lorig has his stamp on both kicker Riley Patterson, you know, first team all-conference, 17 of 19 on field goals attempts, 6 of 7 from beyond 40. So something to watch there. Additionally, we heard about him from Christian Gibson at wide receiver. He's the number three receiver, but he was a dangerous return man, one of the top returners and kickoffs in the country. So if you're looking for a game that's going to be close, and that's kind of how we're saying it, and points are going to matter, and there'll be, I think you got to watch for that kicking game and also the return game and be able to match that with your special teams. You know, we haven't seen KJ Hamler in a situation where it wasn't called off get loose. Wouldn't this be the prime, the great opportunity for him to make a special teams impact in a way we haven't necessarily seen develop over his third year on campus? So, by the way, Sean, we'll let the people know on the NFL draft declarations, but Shaka Toney, KJ Hamler, Lamont Wade. Am I missing anyone that we're still waiting on?
Tariq Castrofield.
And as I said, Tariq Castrofield. So we don't have answers for you now, but we'll have them up on the site as soon as possible. And additionally, you may have missed it last week during all the Christmas buildup and being busy with family. We have a full breakdown of this 2020 Penn State recruiting class, which signed last Wednesday. Barton Simmons, the director of scouting from 24/7 Sports, joined us for a really detailed 25-minute conversation on that 27-player class. So just want to encourage folks. I know it's a hectic time of the year, but we think we closed pretty strong here in 2019 with a really solid signing day show. We'll be back with you after the Cotton Bowl has been decided with some final thoughts on 2019 from the podcast. And I think that's about it here from Dallas.
All but the football, yeah. So Cotton Bowl, of course, kicks off at 12 Eastern on Saturday. Hopefully you get this episode in beforehand. If not, probably just here to hear the offensive coordinator stuff, and you probably shut us off by now. So thanks for following along from Dallas. This is Tyler Donahue. I'm Sean Fitz for the Lions 24/7 podcast. We'll see you on the field tomorrow.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9/8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.